My name is Scott James Davis. My Indian name, Lakota name, is Oshkate Tawa, which means his celebration. I am a proud member of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe and also a descendant of the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa. My family, married to my lovely wife, Lorraine Shepherd Davis from Assistaton, Dakota Oyate. We have four lovely children, Anthony, Angelina, Santana, and little Scotty. And we're also proud grandparents now, and proud grandparents of Keon and also of Anton. So two grandsons, so we're pretty happy. My education, I have a two-year degree from Haskell Indian Nations University in Lawrence, Kansas. I also have a four-year bachelor's degree in business from the University of Mary, and also a master's degree in management from the University of Mary, and also an executive education from the executive education certificate from the John F. Kennedy School of Government in Harvard. That's pretty much the sum of my education, my background. Employment, I've had a lot of jobs over the years. Everything from a school teacher, adjunct instructor at the college level, coach basketball, track, cross country. Also, I was a wildland firefighter for some time, for a few seasons. Did a lot of construction work, concrete, asphalt, framing houses. Did some sales. I worked as a sales consultant out at West Fargo for a firm called Northern Documents out of Fargo. And did some work for the United Tribes Technical College here in Bismarck as a business manager for the transportation department, wellness activities coordinator, also a development officer for about 2 years. And currently, I serve the governor of our state of North Dakota as his liaison, serving as the commissioner for Indian Affairs for the state of North Dakota. Been doing that now for 6.5 years. So, well, I grew up quite all over the place. Thanks to my my parents are lifelong educators and healthcare providers. My mom did 30 plus years in the Indian Health Service as a dental assistant. Served a lot of patients over her career. Is now retired and enjoying her life and enjoying the grandkids and getting some rest. She put a lot of years and time on serving people. So, and my father, lifelong educator, one of the first, I think, in any country to get his doctorate degree back in the 70s, a doctorate in education administration from Penn State University in Pennsylvania. So throughout those my parents' career, we moved all over the place quite a bit, back and forth to Pennsylvania, Montana, out in Rocky Boy, Montana. Was born out in Breckenridge, Minnesota, just across the river from Wapton, North Dakota, where my father was a school teacher and coach. And lived in Belcourt for a time or two when I was real young, I think in the kindergarten era. And then finally ended up here in Bismarck. My dad working for state government and also the United Tribes Technical College. And so what that did for me, I think moving around from various places on and off the reservations provided me a way, I guess a learning tool of how to live in two worlds, as they say, living off the res and on the res. You know, it can be somewhat different, somewhat the same, but obviously when you're living off the reservation in a city area like Bismarck or Mandan, you're accustomed to a lot of different cultures, a lot of different people, a lot of different ways of doing things. So the same holds true with living on the reservation, whether I lived in Belcourt as a child, or down in Fort Yates, Standing Rock, during my young adulthood, working down there for my tribe in the environmental department. Had a lot of good experiences, a lot of good friends to this day. I have a lot of good non-native friends around the country. My time at Haskell Indian Nations University, I still have friends, college friends, and even classmates and teammates for all of the country as well, even into Alaska. I was very active growing up in sports, thanks to my father. Very active in competing, track and field, basketball, probably the two main sports there. Very, very competitive family. So a lot of work, a lot of work ethic, a lot of I guess practice, a lot of practice growing up. But it's one thing I think my dad and mom instilled in me was that along with the education was the competitiveness, to be competitive at what you do, and to not just to win, but just to compete and work hard, strive hard, and to be a graceful loser as well, you know. So again, a lot of those things were instilled by my father, mother. Work ethic, you know, a very strong work ethic growing up. Had to do a lot of chores, you know, a lot of work, a lot of homework, you know. But it's really molded me to how I am today as a parent, and also with my work ethic and my career, my profession. I'm a big believer without a work ethic, you know, you're going to really struggle. So I'm really thankful for my parents for promoting that experience with me. Probably the biggest lesson my mother taught me was about communication and speaking up for yourself. You know, I recall a time when I was selling cookies for the Boy Scouts. I was in Boy Scouts at one time, and of course you got to go door to door and sell cookies and candy bars and so forth, and I was kind of afraid, you know, to knock on people's doors and talk to them and so forth. And so I told mom, "Can you come with me to sell these cookies?" She said, "No, I will not do that, because you need to learn to speak up for yourself. Mama's not going to always be there for you, you know, in your life. So you need to learn these things on your own, my boy." So I really took that lesson to heart. I still apply that teaching and some of the speaking I do. And you know, some call it a soft skill, but I think communication, speaking up for yourself, knowing how to speak up for yourself, is really, really an important tool you need in your life, and how do you speak up for yourself. So again, those are experiences that I've had as a child. I knew, I think in adulthood, that we were, I guess, financially poor growing up. I didn't would never know it when I was a child, you know, because mom and dad did a really solid job raising us and providing for us, food on the table, clothes on our back. So never once did I ever feel or was ever had the feeling that we were poor. And again, a lesson my great grandma, DeLorme, taught us on her, I guess on her death, but I wasn't born at the time. But what from my parents told me, well, she talked about family and how rich you are and having a family. So those are things that that have been passed down from my folks and our generations about the value of family and the richness that we have as a family. So again, but growing up again, you know, my parents worked very hard. My dad, I could say, was and probably still is a workaholic. He loves to work. I think that's just with his era, you know, the baby boomer era. That's kind of what they were all raised that way, a work ethic. So that hasn't changed, and I certainly got a big characteristic of that too, in the work ethic and working. But for me, it's probably a little different learning from him how to manage, and I guess you say smell the roses from time to time. And I try to do my best to make a commitment to my family to work very hard, but to balance that with my children, my grandchildren, some of the hobbies I do, you know, that I think are important in keeping balance, balanced life, keeping my my well-being, my happiness intact, so I can be a good father, a good leader, you know, a good husband, a good uncle, good role model. You know, you got to really have find that balance in your life too. So I've learned that over the years, again, through my parents. So yeah, you know, life was pretty good growing up. I think, you know, parents did a good job of a very good job of raising us kids and things like that too. So, but you know, as older, as you get older, you know, especially for me after my track and field career in college, you know, I ran, competed, at a high level in college and track and field and cross country. And when that ended for me, you know, I really found myself in kind of lost, you know, I didn't have a meaning, I guess, of my purpose of what I'm to do because I did, you know, went to school and competed in sports. So I had a lot of free time on my hand and I didn't know how to manage my time very well and kind of start running with the bad crowd, so to speak, and started to indulge myself in alcohol and also in drugs. And so that was probably a big struggle, an adversity that I started facing. I call it self-inflicted adversity, where, you know, combination of too much time on your hands and not being focused and, you know, surrounding yourself with people that have different ideas and different ways of life, and it can get you in trouble pretty quick. So I found myself in needing of treatment, committed myself to a treatment center early in my early 20s, mid-20s, and did my best to, you know, change my life around. And but over the years, I battled with that addiction and to this day, still in recovery. But, you know, it took me a couple of times to get that right, you know, to get beyond that adversity, that self-inflicted adversity of the disease of alcoholism and drug addiction. So, but really what that taught me is a lot about myself, you know, taught me a lot about my limits, my strengths, you know, really me gave me a good focus in the mirror of who I am and who I could be. And but since now being sober for over 9 years, it's life changing. You know, these opportunities that I've created for myself, for my family, through hard work, dedication, you know, it just proves that no matter where you come from or what background you come from, you're going to face adversity. And it's really how you, I guess, personally are going to take the self-initiative to change that. Because over those course of times when, you know, you're in that mindset of drinking and using drugs, people tell you over and over, you know, people who love you, people who are close to you, they love you and they care about you and they tell you things. But you're blinded. You know, you get blinded by the addiction and so forth. And I think sometimes most people have to hit that rock bottom before they can change. And that's kind of what I went through. So that was probably the biggest adversity challenge I had in my life, you know, was that. And granted, there's other things that I went through with, just friends, loss of friends, you know, not so much tragic things, but, you know, I've had a lot of family and friends around me that I've lost over the years from suicide and accidents, car accidents, things like that. So sometimes it's made me numb to some of those things that about death. You know, it's gave me a different perspective. You know, it's given me a very different outlook. Now that I have children and grandchildren, of the importance to stay healthy, you know, take care of yourself, do your best to live in balance, do your best to have that personal sovereign relationship with God, you know. And so it's those things I really try my hardest to focus on each day, is to focus with prayer first and do what he tells me to do, to the best I can, and just live my life to the fullest, and but also enjoy it. I think it's very, very important that you try your best to laugh, to joke, to have humor in your life every day. I know sometimes it's a struggle with sometimes at least my profession of politics, can get pretty stressful at times, but but you really need to have humor in your life and prayer, surround yourself with good people, like-minded people, and just live life, and be happy. And the other thing too, I think about, the past and comparing to the future, and I kind of say this, I learned this from my wife and I were having a discussion about the past and future, not only of ourselves but of our people as Native Americans, is that, we all have a big past. We all know that historically our people have had a lot of a big past, a good past, and a tragic past. But I think we're at a time today, in modern times, is that when I think of our people's past, well, what I've learned is that if our people's past is bigger than our future, the past will always control the future. And I'm real adamant about that when I say that. It's tough to kind of go back and to rekindle or recapture some of those bad memories we may have had, whether it's through a tribe, through our personal experiences. But I look back at and have learned from our ancestors that, and I believe this wholeheartedly, is that our ancestors were psychiatrists. They were psychologists. And what I mean by that is that our ancestors were smart enough to say, hey, when we experience tragedy in our life, as a tribe, as a community, as a people, as a family, it's good to grieve. You have to grieve. I've heard of some tribes where, some people were put on a hill and they were just allowed to, to be, let them act, however they want to be, give them their time and space. And we all understood that. They all understood that, I should say. But the key to that was that they were given a time frame, whether it was a year, 2 years, 4 years, it just depends on each tribe. After that time frame is up, the rule was to, you will grieve no more, you're done. Okay, now it's time to move on, live your life healthy. And I think that was so important, of that type of traditional rule. What that tells me was that our people were healthy and balanced. When adversity arises, it's good to mourn, to grieve, but also you have to have that time to move on. And I think what that teaches me the most is that it benefits the whole tribe. It benefits everybody. It keeps the whole tribe in balance. So it's something important that I think about when I think about our past, whether it's a person or a tribe, is that we need to understand the wrongs that were done to us, but also to learn from it, to gain experience, and to grow in a healthy way from those experiences. So, and that's what I've tried done, with my adversity in my life too. So, but again, it's just it's part of life, And I think when there is adversity or there is struggles, a lot of us may utilize prayer, may utilize a ceremony, may utilize a church. Some may use a doctor, may use medication, whatever that may be. But the key to all that is that there's got to be self-work, self-equity behind that. I've been a big believer that, that God can create all things. God can cure all things. There's no doubt about that in my mind. But I think some of us tend to believe that, a certain ceremony, a certain church, a certain pill, a certain medication may fix us. And I don't think there's ever a fix for anything. The only way we can do our best to fix things is to fix them ourselves, within ourselves. And that's what I call self-sovereignty. Sovereignty of oneself, where you have true ownership of your being, of who you are, of where you want to go, of what direction you want to go. So I'm a big believer in self-sovereignty, and controlling your direction, where you go. And so those are things that I guess I've come to learn over the years, you know, in knowing your limits, you know, knowing your strengths, you know, and knowing how to pick yourself up when you fall. And it's certainly okay to fall. And I think if you don't fall from time to time, that means you're not trying. That means, to me, that means that you're not willing to take a calculated risk. And I really believe that we all should take calculated risks in our life. You know, you need to take, you know, a next step forward. But understanding the faith, you know, in yourself, the confidence in yourself, the faith of God helping you, guiding you, I think is probably the most important step in giving you the confidence to take that step. So again, those are just some things I think about, some things I would share, you know, as advice for somebody. But again, I think the basic thing is that if you try your best to live with values, treat people with respect, communicate, you know, love one another, no matter what, you know, and we all have our so-called enemies out there, but it's so important just to continue to love them, to pray for them, and just to, you know, do your best for them. And because I'm sure sometime around it'll come back to you and help you as well. So, but yeah, that's kind of my thoughts about, you know, my life. Try to keep it simple, you know, not too complex, but I'm a very, very lucky man, a very, very blessed man with a beautiful wife, educated wife, a very hard working wife. Sometimes I think she works too much, but I am blessed, and my beautiful, healthy children, my grandchildren, you know, they're just the world to me, my wife. And I think that's the biggest thing why we work so hard, is just to keep them happy, try to be a role model for them, you know, and having that balance with my wife as the nurturer, you know, when there's tears and things like that, you know, they go to their mama, and that's a good thing. Whereas daddy, I can be a little bit more tougher on them, and that's my role, you know. And it's kind of my role to have that discipline to prepare them for life when you fall down and hurt yourself. And you got to learn how to get back up. And sometimes what I call be there, but not really be there. You know, you're watching them, but you gotta watch them fall. And it breaks my heart to see that, watch that. But in the long run, I'm a big believer that that sooner they learn to pick themselves up, learn from things, the better off they're going to be in the long run. So again, those are just some advices as a father. But I think the key to anything is, again, like with marriage, any type of relationship, is that you got to understand each other, forgive, take the time to listen, you know, set things aside, have eye-to-eye contact, and communicate. So again, those are just things that I want to share, and really appreciate this interview, and I just look forward to hopefully this advice helps somebody out there, or, you know, helped you understand with something. So thank you very much.